And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, October 27th, 2022, pretty soon to be 2023. Dave, good afternoon.
Oh, gosh, don't say that. Yes. Hello, Melody.
Yes, hey. It's good to have you back. And
good to be back. And, it's a lot of happy National Days today.
Oh, I just can't wait.
Well, it's National American Beer Day, so This bud's for you.
Cheers.
It's also National Black Cat Day.
Apropos
for this time of year. And for the veterans out there, it's National Navy Day.
Woo-hoo.
But the commemoration I'm celebrating most today is National Civics Day. October 27th celebrates the importance of civics education across America. Sort of what we do here on Financial Survival. Educate our listeners.
Too bad our schools don't do it anymore, but hey.
Oh, well. Can't have it all, I guess.
That's what they should be teaching instead of some of this other stuff. But
you don't like that man in the kitchen class?
Or am I a little girl? Or never mind. Anyway, let's go ahead and get looking at the gold and silver prices today. We had gold down just a couple bucks today at $1,663. Silver was down 5 pennies at $19.62. Platinum was up 7 at $970, and palladium was down 1.5% at $2,018. That USDX today was a little stronger. It was 0.86 at 110.52. Crude oil was up another $1.12 at 89.03. Paper markets today, the Dow was up almost 200 points at 32,036. S&P was down at 22.73, and the NASDAQ was down 178 at 10,792. And, I guess this was better than expected GDP, but I can tear that up. Report a little bit apart. We'll be talking about that here in just a little bit. And let's see if there's any other interesting news here. Europe, it was a mixed bag for Europe. Some up, some down. Asia was the same. Bonds, 10-year yield dropped a little bit below 4, 3.915. And natural gas was down once again 3% at 5.43. So kind of we'll be talking about that here a little bit later on in the program. So let's go ahead and get started, Dave. And again, the big discussion and the reasons, who cares if the computer shares and everything, it plunged. Meta shares plunged 24% to the lowest price since 2016. Who cares about that? Our GDP, though, showed the first period of growth for 2022. I don't know if it's eliminating any or temporarily easing any recession fears or not. If folks that don't know what's going on and so forth, and recession is here, and it takes more than one period of growth to eliminate that we're already in a recession. So I'm not so sure, but the Bureau of Economic Analysis said that the GDP, which is a sum of all the goods and services that was produced from July through September, increased by 2.6. Annualized pace for the period, 0.3 of a point above their forecast of 2.3. So I guess that's a big deal. It doesn't seem like that much of a big deal, but when you're looking for anything that you can say is a positive GDP, you're going to grab it. The preliminary reading follows two consecutive negative quarters. Of course, that was usually the definition of a recession. And they say that the growth came in large part due to a narrowing trade deficit, which was sort of expected, and also not to be repeated in future quarters. So this is supposedly a one-time deal. The GDP gains also came from increases in consumer spending, non-residential fixed investment, and probably, I don't know that we have the percentages on this or not, of government spending. So good old government. We can always count on them to increase the GDP to make everyone warm and fuzzy inside. So the report reflects an ongoing shift to services spending over goods, with spending on services increasing 2.8%, while goods spending dropped 1.2%. So that really isn't a good number there. You don't want your goods dropping. But hey, Dave?
Indeed. Well, declines in residential fixed investment, which we'll be talking about shortly, more about, and private inventories offset the gains, according to the BEA. We have economist Paul Ashworth at Capital Economics noting, quote, overall, while the 2.6% rebound in the third quarter more than reversed the decline in the first half of the year, we don't expect this strength to be sustained. And he added, exports will soon fade, domestic demand still getting crushed. It's going to get worse as interest rates get higher. So we expect the economy to enter a mild recession in the first half of next year. We have a different view on that, but the underlying picture from the BEA report shows an economy slowing in any event, particularly the consumer and private investment. Now, consumer spending is measured through the PCE index increased at a 1.4% pace in the third quarter. That's down 2% from 2% in the second. Again, gross private domestic investment fell 8.5%, although it was a lesser shortfall, if you will, continuing a trend after falling 14% in the previous quarter. But again, notably, residential investment, which is a gauge of home building, tumbled over 26%. On top of the nearly 18% in the second quarter. On the plus side, exports, which add to GDP, rose over 14%, while imports, which subtract from it, dropped about 7%.
Well, my question is, what are we exporting other than weapons to Ukraine? You know, with our strong dollar, it makes our exports more expensive. Right. So it makes you wonder. And then we have the imports. If the imports are dropping, that mean I would say then consumers aren't buying as much. So, again, just these numbers, I don't think doesn't seem to be a true reflection of what really is going out there in the people's economy. And it would be interesting to see what those exports were. Or was that part of the government spending? I don't know. But so, it's just kind of interesting how they give all the details and so much, but then they always fail to, unless you have an idea, Dave.
Well, I really don't. I believe you're right about the arms shipments. Now, interestingly, I don't know if shipments of U.S. dollars abroad counts toward that. But let's see, the import, blah, blah, blah. Imports led by vehicles, parts, and engines.
Those are imports, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, of goods.
Which dropped.
Imports of services, increases in charges for use of intellectual property. primarily, let's see, sea freight transport, personal travel.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, a lot of things I can make it. And again, there's two or three revisions on it, so we'll have to see how those are revised.
That's the key.
Usually the first one is just a feel-good thing, makes the stock market go higher, and, you know, hey, they need it for the election. So, and again, I don't take any prior to elections, I don't care which one it is, you can't believe anything that's being released as far as stats and so forth. They'll all be rosy for the most part. And again, on inflation, they can call this some good news on inflation. It seems that the chain-weighted price index, which is a cost-of-living measure that it adjusts for consumer behavior, that rose 4.1%, but analysts were expecting something, you know, a whole percent more. The PCE, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, now this is the key inflation measure for the Federal Reserve, that increased 4.2%, and that was down sharply from 7.3% in the prior quarter. Now, how does all of this affect you at the grocery store? I'm not so sure. I don't think you're going to see much changes in that. With the Fed's campaign of interest rate hikes, although he might not do it as a 75 basis point increase. He might slow it down because those higher increases are weighing on the economy, whether they want to admit it or not. So since March, we know the Fed raised its benchmark borrowing rate by 3 percentage points. And, of course, this is the highest level since just before the worst of the financial crisis. So I'm not so sure if those numbers are correct. If, you know, he might just do 50. I don't know. Going into the holidays, you can throw anything in the wind, Dave.
Well, November 1st, next week, I'm fairly certain they'll stick with 75 basis points. There's just been too much pushback from some of the voting members of the FOMC to back down from that. I think in response to your suggestion of 50 basis points, I think that's more likely in December. Maybe that's what you were referring to. Again, there's a lot of news that'll come in between November's increase and the December meeting, so you know, still have several weeks to, and one of those will be the second reading of GDP for the third quarter. But right now, the 75 BP next month, next week, and 50 in December. Well, traders anyway, the future traders, Fed watchers, the so-called Fed watchers, are. I think they're torn right now between 50 and 75 in December. Nearly unanimous for 75 next week, but who knows? You know, we will see. I mean, there's some a lot of talk on today's cable news shows about, you know, the GDP numbers giving more hope to a so-called soft landing as opposed to, you know, plopping us into a deep recession when we're most likely already in a light one, at least, with a lot of continuing pressures, particularly in jobs. There are mixed signals in so many of these metrics. But you look at consumer sentiment, C-suite business sentiment, they're near many decade lows. And, you know, that if it's, you know, smells like a duck and looks like a duck and you hear the faint quackings, it probably is a duck. Suggesting in my own humble opinion that, you know, we continue to ride on in this economic downturn despite these original initial GDP numbers, Melody.
Yeah, and you know, a recession really is, the severity of a recession is really an individual thing. I mean, if, you know, and it does hurt some people more than others. And certainly the fixed income folks and the lower income folks, they certainly are going to notice it more than others. And but we're still a paycheck to paycheck type living. No savings or savings are being spent. So, I mean, these things just don't turn around. I mean, they might say the GDP is better, and they might say that, oh, okay, we're going to avoid a hard recession. It might be softer and so forth. But, you know, you tell the people that who, you know, are having a hard time getting by. And there's a lot, but we never talk, you know, you're not going to see those folks being talked about on a lot of the programs and so forth. And but anyway, we have car prices. Hey, the average new for an average price for a new vehicle, $47,000. That's just rounded out to 50. And the used car average, 31. So that was all last month. So, you know, the prices on new and used vehicles, they still remain 30% to 50% above where they were when the pandemic erupted back in 2020. And so it's with higher prices and loan rates combining to push average monthly payments on a new vehicle above $700. This is an average. It just baffles me how any new vehicles are being sold. We do have millions of them that have been priced out of the new vehicle market. They are buying used vehicles, and that's going to keep those prices higher. And but I guess it's all been, you know, they can't get parts and so forth is also adding pressure to these higher prices to go higher or at least remain stable where they're at. On Tuesday, we had GM. They reported its third quarter net profits. That surged more than 36%. Thanks in part to sales of pickup trucks. And again, the large SUVs. I mean, that's what, you know, that's what's selling, even with the high gasoline prices. It's interesting.
Yeah, and Edmunds cautions that it's going to take years for the used vehicle prices to fall to their pre-pandemic levels. In fact, anywhere close to them. Since 2020, automakers haven't been leasing as many cars, which are at lower and sometimes significantly lower costs than the monthly payments for a purchase.
Yeah, and we hear the music, Dave, so I have to cut you off. My apologies. And we're heading into a break. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. Lots more radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby us night. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And I just want to touch on this briefly, Dave, because I've been getting calls. Melody, I want to sell my $20 gold pieces for bullion coins. So when I get more than one of those calls, I know somebody's out there pitching that people get rid of it and trade it in for gold bullion. And you don't do that. For whatever reason that they're giving you, I can give you 10 reasons why you shouldn't. You're trading a Cadillac for a Ford Escort. You know, you don't trade down. They've been holding up very well. I went back to March of this year when gold hit 2,000, I think 65. I don't have the report in front of me. And compared it to, it was yesterday's prices I compared it to. Bullion gold is down $400. The Mint State 63 St. Gaudens is down $200. Okay? So that should, why would you want to trade when you have a coin who didn't go down, who didn't correct as much as gold bullion did? So there's a purpose and a reason for them to be in your portfolio. And don't allow someone to talk you into something else. They're just churning you. That's what they're doing. They're churning you. It's not your benefit. It's their benefit. So they get to buy back your $20 gold pieces, make a profit on that, and then they sell you your bullion and make a profit on that. And so then you're losing even more money because now you have to make up for all the profit that you bought in the front and then all the profit that you buy now. Don't do it. But I can always tell when someone out there is pitching something and it's for their agenda only. Just like when people tell me, well, so-and-so called me and they want me to do this. Well, why'd they call you? What made them call you if it's such a great deal? So again, and that goes to everything when people call you wanting to sell you something. Why are they calling you? It must be such a great deal. They wouldn't be calling you. So anyway, 1-800-375-4188. Give us a call. And it's just like these mortgage rates. I just want to touch on this before we move on, Dave. 7%. It's the first time in more than 20 years. And, as we continue to see the Fed, as we talked about, raising rates, Freddie Mac reported today that the average on the key 30-year rate jumped to 7.08 from 6.94% last week and April of 2002 was the last time that the average rate was 7%. And you can remember we were just coming out of 9/11 but we were still a few years away from the housing market. But we talked about the housing market for most of that time after that. Last year at this time, rates on the 30-year mortgage, 3.14%. This is why I'm not so sure the Fed's going to be so aggressive. 7% is huge. And have you seen a slowing down in your area, Dave?
Dave?
Hello. Sorry.
Yes.
No, I have not. Unless you're talking about credit unions. Credit unions, the increases have certainly lagged the major bank rates. And I mean that's the primary difference that we see in this southeast Pennsylvania region. I wouldn't be so surprised if it were like that across most of the country. Credit unions almost always have lower overhead, so they can charge less and provide a little bit more on the investment end. But I can't quantify that with any specific numbers. It's just anecdotally what I've been noticing.
Well, you know, the ECB, you have central banks all over the world that are increasing their rates. You have the ECB, and I'm just going to touch on this, and then you can add to what you'd like to, Dave. You have the ECB, they increase the rates by 75 basis points again. You know, that matches its record increase from last month. And again, inflation remains far too high, the ECB president said, and it's going to stay high for an extended period. So they're going to keep hiking. You have the Canada doing the same thing. They raised rates by 50 basis points. I'm not so sure if it got a little better. They were expected to raise it by 75 percentage points yesterday. But they surprised the markets with only 50. I think that's what the U.S. is going to do, but that's just me. Would you like to comment on both of those, Dave, please?
Yeah, well, for one thing, I mean, inflation in the euro area is just about 10%. It's 8.2, at least as reported by our respective governments, 8.2 in the U.S. You know, I saw an interesting table the other day comparing the U.S.'s inflation rates with other areas of the world. I mean, with us at 8.2, go to Mexico, 8.7, run over to Italy, you got Italy and Spain at 8.9, the entire Eurozone just shy of 10, Germany at 10, U.K. a little over 10, Netherlands 14.5. Of course, you go to Turkey, and it's, what, in the 80s? Same with Argentina. Venezuela, God, I have no clue where they are these days. They have been, I mean, they went from 100%.
They're all coming across the border. That's where they're at.
To 1,000% to 1,000,000. I mean, there's some absurd numbers in some places in South America. But, you know, Lagarde, like other central bank leaders, keep pointing to Putin's war and you know, warning that an extended war there remains the biggest risk to particularly Europe with, you know, natural gas, oil, and electricity costs. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's not that far from winter. We'll see how all the geopolitics is playing out in just a few more months. Now, interestingly, like here in the U.S., futures analysts are seeing another half point increase by the ECB at their December meeting. And you have folks like the IMF's Kristalina Georgieva is, you know, warning that, you know, continuing tightened monetary policy, especially too much and too fast, raises the risk of prolonged recessions. So, again, it's a big guessing game. I think a lot of these forecasters like to think that, you know, they're educated guesses, that educated for calculated forecasts. I'm not so sure. It seems like these microeconomies, wherever you're talking about, large countries and small advanced countries, and not have minds of their own. So I think a lot, abroad could depend on the strength of the U.S. dollar in the next couple of months. We've seen it backtrack from ties into the 113s recently to down, around 110. So we're not sure if that's part of a correction or if it's just some other factors that play temporarily. Anyway, I think Canada got it closer to being right, as been with Australia, who downgraded or downshifted, I guess, their latest increase to 25 basis points. But in any event, don't expect any miracles from the Fed, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, this is interesting because one minute you have, Europe is going to go through this this winter of the freeze and so forth, and now all of a sudden they got an abundance of natural gas, and it's like, hey, we're good. Prices are dropping. We got more of the stockpile. It's like, really? Are you kidding me? So where are they getting their natural gas if there is still an issue with supposedly Russia cutting off? We know Germany went around and started, doing their own deal and so forth. So it'd be interesting to see exactly, where all their gas, natural gas is coming from. I mean, it's good, for the people, but it's kind of interesting to see all of a sudden there's this change. But prices are down nearly 50% in just last month and more than 70% from their August peak. So how does that all happen, Dave? Do we have a lag time here, Dave, or something?
No. We have a microphone button that keeps getting put on mute.
Not good for live radio, Dave.
indeed. My apologies. It's an interesting. I mean, with the Gazprom Nord Stream pipeline shut down, I mean, normally the EU gets over 40% of its natural gas from Russia. Now it could be Africa. I think Algeria, Nigeria count for almost 10% of Europe's gas. I don't know what's going on in the Middle East. Iraq, Qatar, other smaller countries in that region. Again, I'm not seeing any specific figures for recent months, particularly that are in line with this article that we're talking about. But I found it interesting that Rystad Energy analysts said just yesterday that Europe now has enough gas stored to survive this winter, caveating, of course, unless it gets very, very cold. They say the Eurozone's not out of the woods just yet, because with Russian flows cut off or declining significantly, longer we get into 2023, thinking next winter is going to be even tougher.
Well, I question, it says winter of 2023. Okay, does that mean January of 2023? Is that the winter of 2023? And they're just talking that they're out of the woods for, November, December, that winter of 2022?
I don't know. Yeah, well, good question. I took it to be next winter, this time of year, but it could very well be just January, February, March of
2023, for 2023,
which is a completely different story. I mean, that makes it, what do the experts say, existential. Now.
I mean, we certainly don't want to see people freeze or anything like that. So that is a good news. But, Chinese President for life, forever and ever, Xi Jinping said He's willing to work with the U.S. Yeah, how about that? Do you believe him?
Thank you.
Do you believe him? He wants to find ways to cooperate. These are comments that come before a potential meeting with Biden at the Group of 20 summit just next month. Better communication between the two nations would bolster global peace, really. I don't think that's going to happen because you'd have to take Taiwan out of the equation, and that's not going to happen. So as long as those little caveats are there, there is no world peace, ladies and gentlemen. Xi did say China stands ready to work with the United States to find the right way to get along with each other in the new era on the basis of mutual respect, peaceful coexistence, and a win-win cooperation, which will benefit.
This is a very astute statement, actually. You know, coming out of his National Party Congress last week, and here's again, this is where words matter. And I think where actions will speak louder than words. Whoever wrote this speech or statement was thinking. Here you got the guy who's just coming into his 11th year as president for life, and he says he's willing to work with the U.S. And say he will work with the U.S. He's willing to. We're ready to work with. Not we will, or we're going to. And I think that's, at this point, Melody, especially with Taiwan hanging over our mutual heads, I think that's why he couched. One, he wanted to be perceived. Whether he was speaking to the communists who reelected him, or whether he was speaking with concerned Chinese citizens or whomever, whether he was speaking, sending a message to us. I think it's a big difference from saying, you know, we're ready, willing, and able. I mean, okay, that's good faith, yeah. I guess. Let's see some substantial action that benefits both nations at least a little bit. Taiwan's the key here. And some, again, as we've been talking about on this program, there's some analysts thinking that this is the time, the next few months are critical for China. Put their mouths behind their words.
Yep, and we're heading into the break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Well, I'm not going to bring you down, ladies and gentlemen, I promise. Dave Allen back with you on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Melody taking Claire care of other client business. This final segment, you can reach her at 1-800-375-4188. Let's drill down a little bit on today's government GDP report, shall we? One thing that stood out from the report, for me anyway, is this. The housing sector is overwhelmingly bearing the brunt of the Fed's efforts to slow down the economy, especially now that mortgage rates are topping 7%. Crazy. I mean, in effect, the economic pain being wrought in order to reduce inflation is concentrated to a remarkable degree in one sector, at least for now. The Fed's rate hike campaign may eventually succeed at slowing the overall economy, or enough of it, but the burden right now is disproportionately falling on those trying to buy, sell, or build houses. And that makes the policies less effective at bringing down inflation than they might otherwise be if the impact were wider. Third quarter growth rose at 2.6% annually, as we talked about in the first segment. According to the Commerce Department's Bureau of Economic Analysis, due to a narrowing trade deficit and steady growth in consumer spending. That reversed two consecutive quarters of contraction in the first half of the year. That total was roughly cumulative total about 1.5%, was it? 0.6 and 0.9% falls. In any event, clearly points to an economy that's nevertheless slowed over the course of this year. If final sales to private domestic purchasers, an indicator of underlying trend growth, rose only at a 0.1% rate, 2.1% in the first quarter, numbers on residential investment really stand out. In that sector contracted 26.4% annualized rate in Q3, subtracting more from GDP than it has in any year since 2007. How bad is that? You had folks like Axios's Courtney Brown, Neil Irwin, pointing out that residential investment pulled more from total growth at nearly 1.4 percentage points than consumption spending added at 0.97 a point. Residential investment is only 4% of the total economy. Personal consumption is 68%. So the 26.4% rate of contraction in housing nearly as bad as during the height of the pandemic when it was minus 27.4%. The second quarter, 2020, and the global financial crisis when it shrank almost 34% in late 2008. Now, housing's always one of the most volatile parts of the economy and certainly the most sensitive, or among the most sensitive to rate increases and decreases. UCLA economist Ed Lerner famously wrote in 2007 that housing is the business cycle. But what's striking about this particular economic moment is how little the impact of Fed policy is evident in any other segment of the economy. Personal consumption expenditures chugged ahead at a 1.4% growth rate last quarter, Non-residential investment rising 3.7. Now, a more evenly balanced slowdown would probably reduce overall demand in the economy more, bringing down inflation faster with more widespread but less intense economic pain. But how we get there is above my pay grade, I'm afraid, but clearly the Fed's obsession with interest rates isn't the only way. Now, I was going to mention a new book by Emily Flitter called The White Wall, How Big Finance Bankrupts Black America. But I think I'm going to save that for next week. I just saw something right before the program started today. far from the independent institution it touts itself as, yesterday's Intercept blog says the Federal Reserve is under intense pressure at all times from massive commercial banks and other financial institutions advocating for favorable regulations. Fed has come under scrutiny in recent months for its aggressive interest rate hikes to get wages down and then get inflation down. Fed's own research has warned that its aggressive policy mirrors a similar one that caused the severe recession under Paul Volcker in the 1980s. Even the UN, which recently warned that the Fed's rate hike risks inflicting worse damage than the 2008 financial crisis and the COVID-19 shock in 2020. And yet President Biden, unlike Trump, has declined to publicly criticize the Fed, saying after it began hiking rates earlier this year that he would, quote, respect the Fed's independence. Well, besides setting monetary policy, the Fed's also tasked with regulating commercial banks. You may recall that Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts opposed Powell's renomination by both Trump in 2018 and Biden in 2021 because what she considered his weak position on banking regulations. She warned more recently, Powell will roll back critical rules that help guard against another financial crisis, and that is simply a risk we cannot afford. The intense lobbying the Fed's been subjected to is targeted at these banking regulations. For example, The Intercept's Daniel Bogislaw and Ken Klippenstein note that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, of course the main business lobby in the country, reported lobbying on Powell's nomination along with Federal Reserve regulatory reform, that is deregulation that Powell is known to favor, as part of its $15.4 million lobbying activities in the first quarter of 2018. As the author said, the Fed under Powell would go on to water down key elements of the Dodd-Frank banking regs passed in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. The paid lobbyists make their case on behalf of massive financial corporations in the same fashion as K Street lobbyists hawking their wares to members of Congress. In 2022 alone, Bogislaw and Kippenstein note that over 120 groups reported lobbying the Fed on issues ranging from credit card fees to cryptocurrency to sprawling monetary policy initiatives like mortgage finance. Even postings on the Fed website in the past year record meetings with Discover Financial, Student Loan Servicing Alliance, National Bankers Association, Capital One, JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman Sachs. Notably, U.S. banks saw their profits rise about 8% in the second quarter of 2022 because of rate hikes that began then, though profits, admittedly, were still down year over year. Senator Warren said, when you have Fed officials sitting next to the J.P. Morgans and Wells Fargos at all these events, do you really think the interests of communities are being represented? Fed officials, she continued, need to remember who they work for, the American people, not banks. And last today, as President Biden was planning a politically risky trip to Saudi Arabia over the summer as top aides thought they had struck a secret deal to boost oil production through the end of this year. It was an arrangement, they say, that could have helped justify breaking a campaign pledge to shun the kingdom and its crown prince. As it turns out, it didn't quite work out that way. Of course, Biden went through with the trip, but earlier this month, Saudi Arabia and Russia steered a group of oil-producing peers in voting to slash oil production by 2 million barrels a day. It's the opposite of the outcome the administration thought it had secured, as the Democratic Party in particular struggles to deal with inflation and high gas prices heading into midterm elections now less than 2 weeks. The Saudis' move led angry White House officials to reassess America's relationship with the kingdom and produced a flurry of accusatory statements between the two governments. One of them was a charge by the White House that Saudi Arabia was helping Russia in its war in Ukraine. Lawmakers who had been told about the trip's benefits and classified briefings that included details of the oil deal have been left fuming that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman literally duped the administration. The deal was supposed to lead to a surge in oil production between September and December, lowering gas pump prices in the U.S. and around the world. What happened over the last several months is a story apparently of handshake agreements, wishful thinking, missed signals, and now finger-pointing over broken promises. Pardon me. Now, far from rebuilding a relationship with the leader Biden had once pledged to treat as a pariah after the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, the outcome has been another low point in America's tumultuous ties with Saudi Arabia. The episode's also a revealing example of how the Saudis, under the leadership of its ambition and often ruthless crown prince, appears eager to shed some of its longtime resilience on the U.S., with Prince Mohammed trying to position Saudi Arabia as a powerhouse of its own. American officials said that even days before the OPEC Plus decision, they had received assurances from the crown prince there'd be no production cuts. And when they learned of the Saudi reversal, they made a futile last-ditch push to change the mind of the royal court. Saudi Energy Ministry said, quote, the kingdom rejects these allegations and stresses that such mischaracterizations are entirely false. Ministry added the decisions of OPEC Plus are reached by the consensus of all members and determined solely by market fundamentals, not politics. Yeah, right. White House officials admit they were angered and surprised by what they said was a Saudi about-face, but they insist their overall strategy to lower energy costs is working. Now, at the same time, U.S. officials are bracing for another potential price surge in December if a European embargo on Russian oil goes into effect and the Saudis refuse to increase oil production to make up for that reduction in supply. The officials say that would be a sure sign the Saudis were helping Russians by undermining the American and European-led plan. Now, officials from America said that in May they reached a private oil deal with the Saudis that had two parts. First, the Saudis would accelerate an OPEC Plus production increase of 400,000 barrels a day already planned for September, moving it to July and August. Then the Saudis would next get the cartel to announce a further production increase of another 200,000 barrels a day for each month from September to December. Well, as we now know, on June 2nd, OPEC Plus did indeed announce they'd move up the production increase scheduled for September, fulfilling the first part of the secret deal. And that same day, the White House announced that Biden would soon make a trip to Saudi Arabia. Well, the Americans came away from that summit with the belief that the agreement was on track and that Crown Prince Mohammed was satisfied, thus, you know, following through with part two of the deal. But in Riyadh, top Saudi officials were privately telling others that they had no plans for further meaningful oil production increases. Now, American officials say they believe that Crown Prince Mohammed was particularly influenced by a high-level meeting on September 27th, where Prince Abdulaziz, the energy minister, Saudi energy minister, argued that cuts were needed to keep prices from plummeting. U.S. officials said they learned that Prince Abdulaziz asserted that the Saudi government would lack the resources to fund economic diversification projects at the heart of Prince Mohammed's domestic agenda. What to say? What to do? It is a dilemma. And the elections are upon us. Put that aside. Prices at the gas pump, which have started to come back down again, have to come down a lot more. An answer to whether Riyadh has truly cast its lot with Moscow or is on board with the West will come on December 4th, when OPEC Plus is scheduled to meet next. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch. Also, again, be on the lookout for our American Survival newsletter in your email inboxes. Come out tomorrow this week because of internet issues earlier in the week. As always, thanks to our engineer, Todd, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Have a great evening. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.